You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Noble and Roosh Show, brought to you by Ball is Life and Dash Radio.
Welcome back to another episode of the Noble and Roosh Show, hosted by Ball is Life. I'm your host, Roosh Williams, with my co-host, Zach Noble. And today, all the way from the East Coast in New York, we have Miss Cassidy Hubberth joining us. Cassidy, thank you for your time. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, guys. We got the whole map covered.
We jacked up.
East, West, Central. Let's go.
Got West Coast, East Coast, the Midwest, the good old humble Midwest.
Yeah.
And you got a coffee with you today, so I'm assuming you're wired up, ready to go.
Yeah. I'm not going to sleep tonight, but you know, that's okay. I had to get it in the middle of the day.
So how are things going with you? Just kind of checking in, like, you know, life update, everything all good, the season going well, the Bulls are doing decent. I'm sure that that's pleasing to you.
You know what? When I was in Cleveland, I saw Zach LaVine, obviously, and I was walking past him in the hallway. And, you know, I did an interview with him last year during COVID, was a Zoom interview. And, you know, like I revealed that obviously I grew up a Bulls fan. And so it was great to see, you know, the team having some success again. And he just straight up called me out in the hallway. He goes, I know you're happy with how well we're doing. I go, I'm professional. Okay. I am completely objective. Can you not call me out, Zach? So that's my answer to you as well. But they are fun to watch. I have been, you know, watching a lot of Bulls games. DeMar DeRozan, man, he is, as Katie, you know, tweeted out, he's doing the game right.
I mean, look, sorry, Zach, I just wanted to say, seeing DeMar kind of have this renaissance in his career, and maybe renaissance is like overplaying it, but he hit that. I mean, he's 32. I am the same age as DeMar DeRozan. And so when you hit this age, you don't typically elevate like that, right? And to just have like an MVP caliber season, you know, breaking or setting or tying records with MJ and Wilt and things like this. Like, I mean, it's really, as a basketball fan, just purely as a basketball fan, for me, it's incredible to see. And for the city of Chicago, it's awesome. I mean, you know, when we all grew up, MJ and the Bulls were MJ and the Bulls, right? So for me personally, the NBA is just much more fun when the Bulls are good, and the Knicks, but we're not getting the Knicks this season though.
Last year was fun.
It was until they got bounced in the first round, but it was fun, you know? So.
Hey, speak for yourself, Roosh. I'm elevating in the 30s. Okay. You may be going backwards.
Same, buddy.
Hey, I'm peaking in my 30s like 2 times. Don't get it twisted.
Cassidy, so.
And you're on the better side of 35, which I'm not. So, you know, like enjoy the 32.
Yeah, the grays are popping though. Like the grays have been populating for a while, you know, in my hair, but now they're popping up in the chest and in the beard, and it's like, oh god.
But Roosh, okay, with men though, the gray is like, you know, that's a thing.
Right.
Women, the gray hair, like I've been dyeing my hair since I was like early 20s. It's genetic. My brother is the same way, but like he's been rocking this George Clooney look, and it's been working for him.
Right.
The gray
right.
hair does not work for me. So,
I like to call the gray hair wisdom. This is a little bit of wisdom, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But on the flip side of that,
you don't have to dye your hair once a month.
But on the flip side of that, dyeing your hair, I mean, look, I'm not a woman. I don't know, but I feel like it's more societally acceptable and like, you know, just it's something that we're used to. Whereas men, like guys, we, you know, if I was to dye my hair, my boys would be like, you dyeing your hair, bro? You know?
No. See, you know what? We got to stop that. Like, men should be allowed to dye their hair. They should be allowed to, if they feel like, you know, I've been seeing these things on TikToks where guys have been getting, no, like basically weaves, fine, whatever. Wow. You know, like, wow. if you, or like a wig, you know, glued or sewed on, just like
I've women, seen that.
If women can do it and it gives confidence to some men, I don't think men should be shamed if they feel good about it.
Thinking, can you think of any NBA coaches that do? Because Bill Self and Mike Krzyzewski come to mind. Like, I guarantee, I know Bill wears a toupee, I believe. And Coach K, I mean,
hey, I know Joe Buck. Joe Buck had the thing where he was very open about his earplugs.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right. And then that, like,
I don't judge.
Almost, no, was that like, it was like life threatening. Or he also, like, it impacted his voice too. I forget the story.
Something very serious, though. Yeah, it was like a very serious issue for him to some degree. But to your point, it's weird because like when you're younger, you're like, oh my God, I don't want my hair to turn gray. And now I'm like, shit, I look good. You know what I mean? You know?
All right, we're not here to talk about our hair. But with that said, the Chicago Bulls, I mean, they've been cooling off a bit. I mean, you've obviously been a part of the ride. I'm sure you're kind of like a little Timberwolves fan in that perspective. I mean, the last 10 years, I mean, you're just appreciating the wins. I mean, yeah, you've had way more success than us. I don't mean to compare you to the worst franchise in the NBA, but I'm really feeling just any and ever.
That's the Kings. That's the Kings.
That sounds like the Kings. Yes. Something all to right. say about
I'll
that.
Take it. I'll take it. But I would disagree. with that said, where are your expectations?
Well, actually, the Rockets and Magic have say something to say about that right now. Actually,
Cassie, too, please do me a favor and watch yourself. I am a Houstonian and a diehard Rocket.
So. You guys deserve about 10 years of hell to get on our level.
Yeah, no, we're in the dumps right now, but Jalen Green is popping, baby. Hey,
Filipino.
There you go.
Yeah.
But Zach, what were you saying about the T-Wolves?
All right. Now, is he the only, who are the other Filipinos in the league?
Clarkson.
There we go. Okay. I thought there was one more, but where are you at feeling wise?
Filipino Jackson.
Oh.
Eric Spoelstra.
Oh, I didn't know Spo was Filipino.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We're dropping all the knowledge today.
There you go.
From hair to filthy. Yes.
This is the most random episode we've done this so far. But continue.
No, I'm loving it. We'll go everywhere.
This venti is hitting. That's
wherever the venti takes us.
I'll shut up and let you ask a question.
Chicago Bulls, where are we feeling though? Are you just appreciating the wins and the growth of this team? Or were you expecting the world early on and then just DeMar's MVP run and just wanting to go with it and just riding the highs of it because they can't beat a 500 team right now.
I know that's the most
frustrating
part about it. That is everything. But I will say, like, it is very evident what their issue is, and it's defense. And it's kind of hard when you don't have your two best defenders on the court. Like, so there was just a report that Alex Caruso is expected back, you know, soon, mm-hmm. sooner rather than later. And he was locked down to start the year. He was a big part of the reason why they were, you know, sitting at the top for the beginning of the year. And then even Lonzo Ball, his defense underrated. So, you know, I think it's glaring that they have severe defensive issues and they can't beat good teams. And so, you know, that doesn't bode well for, you know, feelings of championship hopes, but they're sitting in the fourth spot, tied in, you know, the win column with the Sixers. Do I trust them more than the Bucks or the Sixers right now? I mean, like, the Heat, I think, are another team to take seriously, but I ultimately wonder how they're going to fare against the Nets. Just given how we saw KD and Kyrie play last night and Milwaukee, but the East is just, man, a gauntlet. So
wide open. Yeah.
It is. And so, like, if the Bulls become whole again, and you just think about like what they're missing too, Patrick Williams would be such a huge part of this team if he, you know, if he didn't get hurt at the beginning of the year, and helping out Vooch big time. So I just, how do I feel about the Bulls? They're exciting. You know, you feel like they're building on something. Their chemistry is great. They're young guys, you know, really give you something to look forward to seeing their growth. Like, is it disappointing that they keep dropping these games to good teams? Yes. But, you know, they also have beaten a lot of good teams, you know, and in the fourth quarter and down to the wire, like they've shown resilience. So there's been a lot of layers to this team that, you know, is you can feel good about.
First and foremost, I'll say this is the most fun I think the East has been in a while.
Yeah.
Even, you know, for a while, it was clearly LeBron heavy, top heavy. So there was really never a question as to who was coming out of the East. It was whatever team LeBron was on. And even in some of those years, you had like the 60-win Hawks team, or you'd have, you know, the DeRozan and Lowry Raptors, but they never felt real. You know, they never felt like real contenders. They felt like kind of fringe contenders, clearly because of LeBron. But this season, you got, you know, star power in the East, and I feel like anybody could get it. So to your point, they're missing the Bulls. They're missing Caruso and Lonzo, two excellent, not only D, but three, right? Three and D guys. So they kind of spread the floor on one end of the court, and then they clamp down on the other end of the court, and they get things moving in transition. So they provide, I think, invaluable value. And then you mentioned the Heat. I have the same concerns about the Heat. Defensively, they're so good. And I think Kyle Lowry might be that kind of veteran, like, I don't know, engine or piece that can push them over the top that they've been missing in recent years. But they also kind of give me that sense of a team that might not have the elite shot creation that they're going to need at certain points in the playoffs. And then I also feel like teams might be able to pack the paint against lineups that have, you know, Jimmy Butler, PJ Tucker, and Bam Adebayo, right?
Right,
so,
right.
So we'll see. I wanted to add, or did you have something to say? I feel like I cut you off.
I just think, like, I think that they're such a deep team, and what we've seen out of the Heat is their ability. Like, I think Eric Spoelstra is my coach of the year so far because of how he's been able to, you know, they've had a lot of injuries, and, you know, they're sitting at the top of the East right now, and they've gone through obviously their COVID issues as well. But they still keep putting guys and lineups out there that just get the job done. And even just the vision to bring Tyler Herro off the bench and make him the sixth man of the year, and the how that kind of like keeps their rotations going to be successful in the plug and play aspect. I have a lot of like faith in the individual pieces, but when it's all said and done, the East is just so talented top to bottom. Like, can Jimmy Butler, you know, basically outduel Giannis? Can you know, cause obviously he's going to be there, the guy who needs to get buckets down the stretch. So can he do that? I mean, we saw him, you know, like give it his all in the bubble, but, you know, can he do that against a Giannis? Can he do that against a Joel? Can he do that against a Kevin Durant? And that's what we're looking at.
I also wanted to say, in addition to the depth is a strength in the regular season. I feel like depth in the playoffs is a little bit overrated because rotations naturally narrow down. So we'll see how that plays, right? Teams that have, like the Raptors, I feel like for years were deep, and then it just didn't matter. But again, LeBron, so we'll see.
Depends how good that depth is.
And also, Miami could draw the Nets in that first round. And if I'm in the East, I do not want to see the Nets at all,
right. Period,
especially when Ben Simmons comes back. But I wanted to use all of those, all of the depth and the strength of the East to kind of transition and ask you, are you buying the Sixers?
Yeah, because I'm buying, as far as what? Like, I'm buying Joel Embiid.
I'm buying Joel Embiid. But we saw, again, I'm a Houstonian. I'm a big Rockets guy. So we saw James Harden kind of do what James Harden tends to do in those moments that matter. And I was the guy pushing the opposite of
it
that narrative.
One out of 82.
Huh?
I know.
And one out of 82. Like, he was 5-0 going into the game.
It was a very emotional game. And I think it was easier for the Nets to come in with a mindset of what they were prepared for. Like, you know, Kevin Durant is no stranger to returning to a place where he was going to getting booed. And then, so if it almost felt like Kevin Durant was motivated, like by his own experience to kind of hush the crowds for Ben. And he understands he needs to get Ben mentally right. Like right now in covering the Nets, all they're saying, obviously, he's ramping back up. He hopes to get in full practice like by the end of this week. Hopefully, you know, today they're practicing, I'm sure, you know, get going. And Nash likes to get guys who are returning at least three times up and down the court with, you know, 5-on-5. So we'll see, like, as far as what the timing is when him coming back. But everything that the team has been saying is that they want to make sure they're getting to know the guy, because we only have less than a month left of the regular season, and they're going to need to figure out a way to gel. This is shorter than a training camp. I feel like that was such a pivotal bonding moment for Katie and Ben Simmons and Kyrie, which is super important for them to bond as well. And you saw it, like, all the reporters who were there before the game obviously came on TNT were saying about the Nets that they looked super focused and locked in. Even Patty Mills making the choice of warming up with Ben Simmons before the game. Like, this is just my guess. I would think that they all kind of came around Ben, was like, you need to get over this hump, like, face it. And then it's over. You know, you may still get booed when you come back, but Patty Mills is, you know, fellow Aussie. He said, I'm going to be there for him whenever he needs me. And it was clear that, like, they were trying to wrap their arms around him and, you know, build this bond over the hate that he was getting there.
No, I loved everything you said there. And I truly believe it, like, it was a bonding experience. That's a perfect way to put that. It's like, these guys, even in the Charlotte game, they said, we got Ben's back. They understood going into that environment, and it's just them basically protecting Ben, and their play went out and said it too. I mean, their actions spoke much louder than their words, and they just went out and got that win for him. And it's like, yeah, Harden's teammates didn't really do that for him either. But I mean, Harden didn't really come out and play that hard either. They just threw up a dud. It's one game. I don't really look at it much from the Sixers' perspective, but in Philly, I do think Ben Simmons fits seamlessly, but you're right. I mean, it's going to be like a 14-day training camp, and they might only, even if he comes back a week or two before the season, it might be one game and without Kyrie, and this guy has to have the ball in his hands a lot for him to be truly Ben Simmons, unless you're just going to use him on defense. So it's going to be interesting how they integrate him back into things. But yeah, I mean, I can't buy an eighth seed, you know, like, everybody's still putting the Nets so far up there right now as being this top team in the East. And it's crazy. And especially after one game, I've never seen overreactions like that. I mean,
I don't think it's an overreaction. I mean, they had a really weird season, right?
Right, but like
Kyrie, the whole vaccination thing, Harden, unfortunately, starting to dog it once he decided he wanted out, you know, out of there and playing a little, you know, differently and then getting out of there. They're still, look, Patty Mills, they still got LaMarcus Aldridge as like a, you know,
I think second. They're a great Curry. Team, but I it's just
Seth
like
Curry Seth Curry was a huge pickup for them.
Yeah.
Like, Seth Curry was killing for the Sixers. They certainly missed his shooting. I hear what you're saying.
I'm Milwaukee all the way. That's what I'm saying. And I put Philly Kevin Durant. Too. And,
yeah. Kevin Durant,
right.
Watching Kevin
best.
Durant last night, he's the best player in the league. Like, and I'm not,
for one
I'm not,
game.
I don't say that for one game. When he plays, he's incredible.
He's been injured, so that matters.
Okay, but he's back.
Yeah, he's not supposed to win any awards, but I agree. He's the best player in the game.
He was an MVP candidate before he got hurt.
Absolutely.
And the biggest thing about like how he approached this injury, talked a lot about, like, it was killing me watching how much we were sliding. And I was out. And usually, you know, I like to get back out there to quiet the noise because that's how I can do it. But he said, I wanted to make sure I was 100%. And like, he returned, he played 35 minutes, you know, like, he's been like, he looks healthy. So if you have a healthy Kevin Durant, and if they're still the eighth seed and you can kick off your first, you know, two series on the road with Kyrie, and who knows what the heck is going on, like, with, this mandate, like,
You live in New York. Do you have any inkling? I mean, I'm sure you get asked that all the time, but like, you have no idea. You're not in the mayor's office. But
are you lining the pockets of New York politicians?
I mean, to echo what Adam Silver said, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, even if you are on the side of the fact that you just like Kyrie Irving should be vaccinated. Okay. And if you're saying that, like, you were making the case that it's unfair for Kyrie to not abide by this mandate because he plays basketball, that's fine. But now that the mandate has changed for the general public, it almost feels like the people who are like on the side of, we don't want to make an exception because he's a basketball player, you're now kind of making an exception because he's a basketball player for him to, you know, not like the opposite way. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm you know, for vaccination, and I think that he should be vaccinated. But it, like, when we're just making rules up that don't make a whole lot of sense, it feeds the argument of like people saying that it's theater. And I think we need to, there needs to be some more clarity specifically around, you know, what's going on with Kyrie Irving, because the Barclays Center sent out a memo that everybody in Barclays doesn't need to be vaccinated anymore, doesn't need to be checked for vaccination. And that masks are optional. So basically the only area that you need to be vaccinated on the court, but the thousands of people around the court can be unvaccinated. Wow. And without masks. So it's just, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well,
I have no idea.
The other thing that's kind of fucked up, unless I have this wrong, and if I do, please tell me. But I think the way I understand it, a visiting player that is not vaccinated can play.
Right.
And that is the part that, to me, it just doesn't add up. But that aside, we're actually factoring
that
in.
That's to like support, you know, acts who come in. Like, for instance, like if the Barclays Center, like you want to have like a musical act come in and they're not vaccinated. Tourism,
that kind of stuff,
yeah,
right?
Like, that, right.
Yeah.
So,
but that being said, I do think it will be relevant if the Nets draw the Raptors in the play-in, because as it's currently slated, what looks likely to me is that the Nets will finish eighth most likely, and the Raptors will most likely finish seventh, subject to change. But if it doesn't, Toronto's not lifting whatever they got going on. I'm pretty confident in that. So it would be the first play-in game, I think, would be 7-8, right? And the Nets would then play the Raptors without Kyrie on the road. So that would be interesting. And then however it plays out after that, I'm not sure. But let me ask you, Cassidy, as of right now, who do you got coming out the East?
I mean, if I had to choose right now, Milwaukee, I guess, would be my choice. But again, it's going to be such a tough out in the East, and it's going to be such a fun, fun playoffs. I cannot wait. I'm like, even looking to the play-in, like, you know, Hawks and LaMelo, even though he's kind of like fallen off a little bit since All-Star, but like, the Hornets, like everybody, the Cavs are surprising. Cavs. How about Boston?
Yeah, Boston could make a push here.
Well,
Boston could honestly finish second if they really continue to get hot. You know,
absolutely. I mean, their defense is legit. They have the best defense in the league right now. Yeah, and I think what they did, you know, Jason Tatum. Deadline.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yep. With Tice, you liked what they did.
Yeah, I mean, I think it solidifies their bench, and then also Derek White, right? So, like, because they needed extra playmaking, facilitating, just extra guard play, right? They were kind of over-relying on Marcus Smart to be, like, that starter piece and then also continue to be, like, that bench plug, and it just kind of was overworked. And so I think Derek White plugs in really nice. And then, I mean, Zach knows on this show, I'm a big Tatum guy, huge Tatum guy, and he's showing you why he is Jason Tatum, right? So I would be, if I'm in the East, man, I'm scared about everybody. I don't want to play Cleveland if they get healthy. We'll see what happens with Jared Allen. I wouldn't want to play Boston. I wouldn't want to play the Nets.
I don't want to play anybody right now.
Play anybody, man. I mean, it's a bloodbath. But I will say with respect to Milwaukee, we'll see what happens. Do we have word on Brooke Lopez? I think Brooke Lopez's absence is important.
Yeah, he is. He's absolutely important. I don't know, actually. I haven't had a Bucks game in a while. But his availability is, it is. It's huge for he's cleared to practice 6 days ago. So I'm not sure. So that means like it looks like he's progressing towards being available for the playoffs.
Yeah, CBS says March 20th. So we'll see on that deadline. I mean, looks like it's been all over the place and been pushed back multiple times. So,
I mean, if he does come back, it then all of a sudden lets you use Ibaka in like a matchup specific type role where he could actually be useful. Ibaka's kind of had some difficulties over the last year or two. And he can't replace Brook Lopez adequately, but if you can use him like here and there spot minutes, he might be more useful.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Zach, you want to shift to the West?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the West? And I want to ask, I mean, it brought up an interesting point. Do you know how they decide to flex games on ESPN? Like when they make that decision and how?
It's the NBA. It's, so like when Ja
it's just always the NBA.
Yeah. When Ja was calling us out, like that we, you know, flexed off of that game, it's the NBA who makes it. I mean, obviously they're working with our programming team. But yeah, that's a decision. Like, you know, that there's some numbers as far as like certain teams always like we have to have one national game. And then there's like a cap of how many times you can show, say, a Warriors or Lakers games. But yeah. That's the NBA, just like us and Turner, like we're all working to try to get the, you know, most interesting games, if you will, you know, on national TV every night.
Speaking of teams getting flexed out and then also tying this into your Filipino Filipino love, the Rockets whooped the Lakers the other night.
I know
Jalen Green had a career game, which goddamn, it was exciting to watch, but what are your thoughts on the Lakers? I mean, is there anything to salvage or is this thing done for the season?
Look, I mean, you can go through all the things that people say, like you can never turn your back on LeBron. You know, like if you have LeBron in your team, like there's always a chance. My take on the Lakers is it's hard to watch Russell Westbrook become the scapegoat when the issue with that team is Anthony Davis. Not saying that Anthony Davis has any control over when he gets hurt, but Anthony Davis was going to be the reason they won a championship mm-hmm. if they were contenders. Anthony Davis, as great as LeBron James is, Anthony Davis was the difference maker in the West. He was the reason why they won in the bubble, because him alongside LeBron James. And Anthony Davis has been hurt this entire season. So to put the blame on Russell Westbrook, and because you have this assumption, a 37-year-old LeBron James team should still be a contender without a member of the 75th anniversary team,
right.
Like, you know, out the majority of the team. I just think it's displaced blame. Like, at least Russell Westbrook has been on the court. Now, I know he's not a great fit, but he's been playing. he's been playing. That's my take. Like, I think it begins and ends with Anthony Davis has not been available for them.
So,
and when he is, he plays great. Right before he got hurt, he was playing incredibly.
I like that, putting LeBron into that perspective like that. And that's kind of how I viewed it as well. It's like, yeah, he can't carry 58-win Cleveland team like that with Zydrunas Oligoskis as a second-best guy. That just can't happen anymore. So my thing is, as well, though, you can't put LeBron at the same level we once had him at, which everybody's trying to do when he has a one-off 56-point game. And the next game, he's
still typical
more,
great.
He can be great. Yeah. He's great in the light that James Harden has been great this year, in my opinion. It's like they've been great 80 to 90% of the time. And they're just, LeBron, especially, he's 37 years old. I mean, you got to lower the expectations, but then you also got to lower who you're comparing him to and in what light. That's just my thought.
It's a bad roster.
It's terrible.
I was going to say. Sorry, go.
No, it's like as good as LeBron can sometimes like carry teams, at least the roster was complimentary, you know? Like it's not going to work when he's playing center. And forced to play center.
Right.
It's just a bad roster. It's an old roster. So not only is like his 37-year-old legs, and this is, and we knew all these problems, but we continue to subscribe
that's why they get
to
these
this
young legs and they didn't work or fit and the whole mess.
Well, the thing for me is, so I agree with Cassidy, right? It's like the roster is just really not good. Youth aside, age aside, they just don't defend, man. Like the other night against the Rockets, they got DJ Augustine came in, gave him 16, 4, 7 from 3. Austin Reeves, undrafted rookie, has been playing above his means, 17 and 4, 3 of 6 from 3. They're relying on Stanley Johnson, who hasn't been in the NBA in a while until this season. Like I just said, Austin Reeves, they're relying on Malik Monk, great offensive player, great spark plug. Defensively, not the same makeup LeBron has had on his championship teams. He's had 3-and-D guys. He can then spread the floor, do what he does, kick it, and work with a second star and just kind of dominate on offense. And then on defense, they're all over the place. And he's got guys like in the past, Caruso, KCP and whoever else that could stick the perimeter and kind of hold that down. But now you're not seeing that, And then off the bench, they have zero firepower. I mean, Avery Bradley, like the corpse of Avery Bradley, Kent Bazemore, even Melo's been playing pretty well for his age, but Melo's, they're overplaying him. They're closing with him. And like Jalen Green said, the game plan was to ISO and attack Melo. And like it worked. Right. So I think you're seeing those kinds of things kind of contribute to their downfall.
I think everything that's been said about the Lakers, is warranted. I think still feeling like they should be achieving a championship level is not warranted. I think we need to be past that point right now.
But that's what happens when you're the king, though.
Yeah,
those are the
expectations.
Understood.
He's just not the king anymore.
And I think people still, I wouldn't necessarily like say that. I just think he may not be the best player in the league.
That's all I'm saying.
The problem with LeBron is that it's hard.
He's saving those legs to play with his son in a couple of years. He's choosing.
It's hard to sit in economy when you've been, sitting in first class for so long. And then you're like, well, this is uncomfortable. You're just mad the whole time. And so I just feel like his energy, he's at a point in his career where obviously legacy is front of mind constantly. And so when that reminder is over and over again, you see it in how he posts on social media, he should celebrate every milestone that he has. But it is evidence that is front of mind. And so when they struggle like this, you could see how it could carry over to the rest of the team. Because it's like, you guys are a part of, contributing to my legacy. And so even if he doesn't say that, it's kind of, understood when you're on a LeBron James team. And so that's if you're not like a cohesive group, that can weigh on you heavy.
Seeing him on a bad team. It just
sucks. I agree. And playing, and playing and on a bad team. Like there's, before the bubble when he wasn't, they were a bad team when he wasn't playing because he was hurt. You can just point to he's been hurt. It's fine. It's not a typical LeBron season. He didn't make the playoffs this year, but then he got hurt. This is going to be rough. Him playing the majority of the season and then, maybe losing in the play-in again, like it's that's going to be tough.
So let me shift gears a little bit and kind of, I want to talk about the play-in. I want to talk about New Orleans and, you know, if Zion was to come back, what do you think is cooking there? Because I think they're very intriguing. McCollum, Ingram, and then you add Zion to the mix. I mean, I think they could start surprising. But I also want to ask your thoughts, and Zach, also curious to hear what you have to think about this since it involves the Timberwolves. The play-in, right? 7 through 10. Right now, the disparity between Minnesota at 7 and New Orleans at 10 is 10.5 games. And I think at some point that gets a little absurd where you're basically penalizing Minnesota for having a pretty damn good season, their best season in a while, by putting them in a position where they could just get bounced in two games if they get unlucky against a team that, you know, significantly underachieved compared to them. So kind of curious to hear your thoughts on like that setup, if that needs to be changed or just overall what you think.
Well, they have two games at, you know, it's not like it's one and done if they stay in that 7 spot. I think we all enjoyed the play-in tournament last year.
Record, I like the play-in.
So, like, I mean, there's always going to be some issue, you know? We see it in, like, all sports. You see it in college football. Like, people want to expand it to, you know, 8, and then it goes to 12. Like, we talk about all the time in the NCAA tournament. Like, I think having like two more teams possibly in the running, like I think it makes sense, and it like adds a great drama to the end of the season, because like, you know, we have like pseudo like play-in games before that, like didn't the Timberwolves at the end of the year before, they, you know, with
game 82
Butler team, yep. And so
that's
like,
right.
And
that, they got the privilege to get thumped by Chris Paul and James Harden. That's correct.
Right. Look at this rivalry between you two. To answer your question, I like the play-in and I don't see glaring need to change it.
If someone's 10 games above, then it's like the play-in, you know, like you don't think there should be some qualification or anything like that. Like if like,
team
like, let's 10 say,
games above, man, would still probably usually get pretty rocked by the two or the one seed. It's just history. So it's like, right. Why not? That's how I look at it.
So you don't care, why not? As a T-Wolves fan?
No, I mean, I want like 6 seed or nothing. Cause if we're not the 6 seed, we're probably not going to compete anyways. That's just history.
I mean, 10 games back is not like what's happening right now. It's 4, right?
Oh no. New Orleans is 10.5 games back.
Oh,
Minnesota.
Okay.
New Orleans is 10. Now Minnesota would play, I think, the Clippers at 8. So, but the loser of that game then has to turn around and play.
Yeah,
you know.
7-8 and then 9-10.
It's a fair question. I really stand true to that point just based on history and the results we've seen. That's why I still can't be fully bought in on the Nets, even though I agree Kevin Durant can beat anybody anytime and Kyrie's electric in the playoffs. But I'm all for it because it's giving teams like the Pelicans making a win now move for CJ McCollum, shaking up the league.
Right.
And that's keeping the hopes of a huge fan base and the Lakers alive. Right. And then the Nets, when they go through this tumultuous season.
Agreed.
So it only brings good things, I think.
Yeah, I agree, you know, because especially what we've experienced in the NBA over the last couple of years with, you know, like, do we remember how many like guys were out with COVID at the beginning of this year, you know? And like when Omicron hit, you know, we brought back like Lance Stevenson, like we were having a tour of guys who were, you know, completely out for years. Like that feels like a completely different season, but that was this season. And
it was this year, like 2022.
Right. So it's just, crazy. I just feel like this year and last year, the if anything, that the play-in really makes sense to allow those teams who, you know, have overcome enough to get themselves close to the playoffs, to still have a chance as they're like rounding the form, being healthy. Like think about like we were just talking about the Celtics. They went through a lot of turmoil at the beginning of the season, whether it be injuries, whether it be COVID and then infighting and just getting used to their new head coach. Like it takes a little bit, you know, especially with the turnover we're seeing with teams, head coaches and players moving different to different teams. Like I like giving those teams on the fringe like a shot. And, you know, like if you can't get it done in two games, then I just think that you're outing yourself. So like it is what it is.
And as a fan of a team that's tanking, I think it also helps because without the plan, you know, those teams, right? The Pelicans, you know, maybe probably not the Lakers given their situation, but the Clippers, yeah. Whoever, they are then incentivized to, you know, start shitting the bed. And so it kind of just gives you like this bad product of like
exactly.
half the conference exactly. is just trying to get that pick. So,
yep.
So I'm with you.
Yeah, Zach. And guys sitting out, like,
yeah, and that's the worst, right? When yep. stars start sitting and it's like late mm-hmm. in the season, and then it really mm-hmm. contributes to the narrative of, oh, the regular season doesn't matter at all and blah,
yeah.
blah. You know.
Cassidy, a couple more and we'll get you out of here. I know you got a hard stop coming up, but with the season coming to an end here, last basketball question, what has been your favorite storyline on the year, you think? If you had to pick one, whether it be DeMar DeRozan surging, let's say outside of the Bulls.
Yes, I will have. gosh, I'm trying to think, like, my favorite story, the Cavs, maybe?
It's up there for sure.
You know, like just their youth and like how surprising they've been, and like even having them win the skills competition in Cleveland. And I love the new format of the skills competition, by the way. That was like, too, that was yeah. really cool. I hope they continue that. I mean, that for that to be the best event of Saturday night, and I was, you know, like, yes, all right, maybe we're off to something good. And
I felt the same way.
Not so much. That was the first thing that came to mind, as far as like Cleveland. Maybe the best is just like the MVP race. And how international players are just dominating right now.
It's amazing. I mean,
with between Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis. To me, Embiid right now. I also cover a lot of East Coast games, so I get to see a lot of front row to Joel. And to me, he's one of, if not the most dominant player in the league. I know that's hard to say because a lot of people have Jokic ahead of him. And Giannis is making a push. And obviously I have a special place in my heart for what DeMar's doing. I just right now feel like Joel, and it's hard because coming off of the performance last night, you know, like that was a big game. Like a lot of people base their votes on narrative, and there was only two games last night, and both Jokic and Embiid lost. But if I had to lean between those two, which seemed to be the two front runners, I would go Embiid. But when I place my votes, I really like I develop a twitch in my eye because like I really like dig in, and I send my ballot at the very, very last second. We do, like, me and Doris always kind of like go back and forth, and we start the conversation, you know, probably starting now, of like which ways we're going, just so we can really talk it out, because it's nerve-wracking because these awards matter. Like these awards not just matter in the grand scheme
of their lives, their careers,
they get people paid too.
That's exactly what I mean. You know,
how long have you had a vote?
6 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I think Embiid is my MVP right now as well, honestly.
I wanted to vote him last year, but I knew I couldn't.
Well, if he didn't, I think he missed too many games last. I think he missed too many games last season. I can't remember.
But if he had like five more games, like But
look, Ben Simmons is out, so he hasn't had a running mate. He's missed some games, and what, Philly's the two seed? Like, come on. And he's playing out of his mind. Yeah. So I think Embiid's my MVP. Sorry.
Embiid is your MVP.
My MVP. And I was going to say my favorite story of the year, is the Grizzlies John Morant.
Yeah, that was mine too. I was about to say that.
Yeah, John Morant turning the Grizzlies around. And also, Cassidy, earlier you mentioned Spo as your coach of the year. And I think I would go Taylor Jenkins, personally.
That's tough. It's those two for me, though. It's one of those two.
What about Monty Williams?
He just, team is so polished and so good. They're perfect. Like, it's the ultimate basketball puzzle. But, like, that was last year. He should have won last year. Now it's just, the team is just ready and polished and built.
But isn't that coaching?
Hey, you're right. If they do, if they finish as the one seed, especially with Chris Paul missing time, I think that's, you know, impressive in and of itself, right?
If it's 67 plus wins, which is, I say, as historic as it gets, which they could get to. I mean, historic, you can say 60, 65, but if it's 67, you have to give it to them. I just don't think they're going to hit that number that which would make me automatically give it to them. I'm probably leaning Spo or Taylor Jenkins is close, but Jimmy Butler's played in like 44 games this year out of the 68, and Tyler Hero being your best player most of the year, arguably, as a six man. Yes, Bam, I would say, is better, but I mean, it's been close.
Tyler, hey, playing Hero. Devil's advocate, though, Phoenix will be the only 60-win team this season, so that is also...
Yeah, they already clinched playoff spot. I'm just saying, like, I think a lot, coach of the year along with MVP is always... It depends. There's so many different definitions of how you view it, you know, with like Tibbs last year, it's just like, oh, so surprising. Like, you know, look at what the Knicks are doing. Like, Tibbs should definitely be coach of the year because, you know, no one thought the Knicks could be good. So could you say that? I know Jamie Bickerstaff is like, you know, a lot of people's pick too, just because like that's some people say, okay, who sucked and now is good. Yeah. So like, that's coaching. Like, and so that's how some people go about it. Or you can look at it like Monty Williams, head coach of the best team consistently from the jump.
How do you go about it?
I think I look at the season in totality and I see what the moves that, you know, Eric Spoelstra has had to make and deal with. And with guys in and out of the lineup and still being at the top. I don't know. I want to say that that's like my full proof way I look at it. And I don't have like a standard, you know, criteria for both MVP and coach of the year. But I like, that's why I have to kind of like talk it through, like what's the most convincing to me.
I appreciate that.
So I don't know, I'm already stressed out, you know what, I feel it in my eye already.
you know what you're doing. I appreciate you saying that though, because a lot of these voters, I mean, you have no idea why they're voting or how they're voting, and there's a lot of pressure on you guys because it is public knowledge too. I'm sure plenty of people have come at you in the past. But my thing is, like, the what you just explained to me and how you vote for coach of the year. Now, I'm not holding you to this. Everything's open and it's going to constantly change. But like, it sounds different than how you'd vote for MVP, because my reasoning, what you gave for coach of the year, is how I would vote for MVP this year. I really, really hold tight on that word valuable, which Nikola Jokic, yes, all the advanced stats back him up. There's, I mean, the numbers, basic numbers for Joel Embiid, back his case up and points per game, but like Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., the second best player, Aaron Gordon, is barely a top 70 guy in this league, barely. Okay, to look at what he's done, about the exact same record, he's only a game and a half, two behind Joel Embiid. That makes him pretty unanimous to me. But
I like how Zach's counted all the way down to 70.
Wait, unanimous? Like, to me, you just made an argument where like, okay.
I think Joel can still take it though. That is what I'm saying. Just because the records are,
then it's not unanimous, Zach.
But right now it is, in my opinion.
I don't think it's unanimous at all. I think it's a close race.
I think it's a close race.
I think it just depends on what you value. I mean, at the end of the day though, what I would say is Embiid has endured the same shit that Jokic has in terms of not, I mean, Ben Simmons has been out, brother, and he doesn't have.
Maxie is really, really good. Tobias Harris is really, really good.
But the distinguishing factor for me is and I've always put a lot of weight on this for MVP, man. You got to be, I mean, for me, you got to be top three, maybe top four, but six, you know, and he's had Ben Simmons out and they're still number two and we'll see where they finish. But I mean, without, you know, we'll see though. Before we get you out of here, Casty, Zach, I think you had a couple career.
Yeah. I mean, we went a little long. I know we're tight on time here. So, I was going to ask you a couple career questions, but I'll just ask you one or two here. Pretty simple. Who are some of your favorite players to interact with, whether it's sideline, before a game, after a game, like in your past work and amongst all your interactions, who are some of the favorite guys you've had just interactions with?
So my answer to this question is always Kyle Lowry, because from the beginning, like when I first started off as a reporter, you know, like he has been kind, and there goes a long way when you can, like, I didn't, you know, I wasn't on big games, or I was at the time when I was making a transition to sidelines, like hosting a late night NBA show. So, you know, no one saw me calling a game with Mike Breen and, you know, Jeff Van Gundy. So Kyle from the beginning always kind of helped me feel comfortable because I was nervous making that transition. And, you know, always takes his time to give me the stuff that I, you know, I need and looks me in the eye, which is not the case with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, has always been kind to me throughout my career. And so I always think about how he treated me at the beginning. And, you know, that hasn't changed. So he is someone who I really obviously enjoy interacting with. And he's just so fun and funny. Obviously LeBron, you know, like every time I get a chance to do a walk-off interview, it's not lost on me that, like, you know, like this is a huge moment. Like I grew up a Bulls fan, and to think about like what would have been like to interview Michael Jordan after like one of his incredible games. And like the thing about LeBron is that, you know, he's such a pro, and he knows and understands that those interviews are part of the game as well, you know, part of the context to the game. And you see it, like he gives such thoughtful answers in those post-game interviews. And so, you know, I really look forward to those times. And also, like, I, you know, there's only gonna be so many of those left. So obviously LeBron, and, you know, like those are the two that, like, obviously are the first ones that come to mind. But you know, I really like interviewing Zach LaVine, not just because he's a Chicago Bull, but
he's just a fun dude.
He is. And a nice guy, and seems like a great teammate. So yeah, I think those would be, you know, the three first guys that come to mind.
No, that's great. Do you have any really embarrassing moments that have stuck out, like one that throughout your career on the sideline that.
Well, I mean, like there was one time, well, when I first, like my first ever time doing sidelines, because I've mostly been a studio host, you know, for the majority of my career before I made the transition to sidelines covering the NBA and, you know, for ESPN, like I had only done sidelines once before making that. Yeah. So I was like super, super.
I thought it was a while longer than that.
That's, yeah. Okay. No. Cause I was mostly in studio, for those like 5 years that was at ESPN before making the transition. But the one other time I did sidelines was for the Big Ten Network. I had no idea what I was doing. I think it was like 21 at the time. They were just like, "Hey, we need you to cover this Penn State basketball game for us." I'm like, "Cool. Like, what do I have no idea what to do." And I thought that like part of my job as a sideline reporter was to like report on what was going on in the huddles, but I am the worst lip reader. Like, and I have, like, I can't hear anything. Like, and so for me to like, so I'm like trying to stand near the huddle to listen in, can't make out anything. Thank God for in the NBA, they do wire it up. So they don't really need me to report on what's happening in the huddle on the NBA side of things. But, it came to a point where I was like, I can't hear a thing, and they need a report from me, that I literally walked onto the court where they were like huddled up and like with my reporter pad, like put my ear to what they were saying. Cause I was like, I need something. And the coach looked at me and was like, what are you doing? And then my producer was like, get out of their huddle.
Oh my God.
I like ran. I'm like, clearly green is all get out. And I had no idea what I was doing. So that still sticks with me. As far as one of the most, can you imagine if I like just like waltzed up to like Pop's huddle and was like, what's up guys? What are you saying? Get, you know, help me transcribe this.
That's so funny. Zach, anything else before we ask our classic question to end every episode?
Go for it. This has been great, Cassie. We appreciate you going the distance with us.
Yeah, we do. We really do. Thank you for spending the time. Obviously had a great time talking to you. So we appreciate your time. And we end every episode, regardless of who it is. It's actually really funny because it's usually just NBA players giving us the answer. And it's like the widest range of answers. But if you could go to dinner with three people in history ever, dead or alive, doesn't matter. Who are they and why?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Pensive thoughts.
So like, I don't know if my answer is going to be that interesting.
That's all right.
Every answer is interesting. We got some Corey Kispert's really like one of the guys he picked was an author, who I've never heard of, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, I just think David Goggins. I think it speaks to, you know, what, you know, matters to me the most, like celebrities and historical figures are cool. But you know, I think that I would, the first person that I would want to have dinner with would be, you can see him in the background right now, would be my husband's dad, who I never met. He would certainly be, one person I'd want at the table. The other person would be,
shout out to Mr. Cassidy Hubbard in the background, by the way. Yes. Doing the dishes. Yes. Is that what I want to see? Yes. Those dishes? Yes.
He's doing the dishes. I don't think he wants to
the
be
man.
I didn't hear the second one. Who was the second one?
Yeah, my Lola, which is my grandmother, who helped raise me and my brothers with my parents. And then the third person, man, like, I feel like I need to have someone like famous in the mix, but cool. And the third person would be, God, this is a really hard question, even though like I've heard this question before, but I've never really thought about it.
Don't worry. No, it takes, everyone sits there and thinks about it for a while.
Yeah. Dead people. I know it's a tough one. You're not in this podcast, babe. He's trying to give me some suggestions. I got no one. Can I just like
music artist? I mean,
anything. Presidents? I don't know. I don't even know.
This is very anticlimactic answer to end
Martha Stewart with all those knives.
She's alive.
There. Guy Fieri.
They could be dead or alive. They don't got to be dead.
Oh, it could be dead or alive.
Yeah.
Oh snap! I thought it was just dead.
Oh no! It could be anyone.
I was like, this got real morbid, and I'm thinking of all the dead people in my life, and I'm like, geez, oh,
no,
my
I'm so sorry. No.
No, that's me. Listen, good job, reporter. Listen to the question. I guess an Obama.
Okay.
You know, that'd be a very like odd grouping, but I think we'd have a good time.
So I bet Obama would love those people.
Grandmother, yes. Father-in-law, yes. Obama.
There you go.
I forgot to ask this real quick. Who's your GOAT since you're from Chicago?
The greatest of all time. This is a longer conversation. It's obviously, I think it's Michael Jordan. He's set in stone, but like, to have, I respect anyone who feels it's LeBron
of course. Well, it's 1A and 1B, but you know.
Well, I, like the 1A, I think LeBron, Michael Jordan changed the game.
Such a New Yorker.
No, he changed the game for all time, you know, like for the NBA, for superstars, and you can't take that away. And LeBron James, his ability to surpass the hype and live up to all the expectations that were put on him in the social media age, I think that's set in stone. So to me, like, their places are forever set at the whatever Mount Rushmore, if you want to get into the sports talk radio, like use all those terms.
No doubt.
But Jordan came first. Like, without Jordan, there wouldn't have been the hype that in the amount of hype that LeBron got, if that makes any sense.
That makes sense. But at the end of the day, you're a Chicago win, so Chicago wins, right? So MJ it is.
Yes. As you said it.
There you go. Cassidy, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. We wish you nothing but the best moving forward. And hopefully we get to do this again at some point.
This was fun, guys. Like, finally came off of my caffeine buzz and crashing. You guys let me. Yes, I'm going to crash. Maybe take an afternoon nap. Psych, that's not what parents do. So yeah,
false.
I'm going to probably have a grande in a couple hours.
Well, maybe Mr. Cassidy Hubbard can, you know, do some babysitting.
Can you?
The dude.
I'm sorry, bro. I apologize for putting you. hey, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll probably get this out maybe Monday or Tuesday. And when we do, we will shoot it over to you and, you know,
appreciate it. And thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate you. Best of luck going forward.
Thanks, guys.
And congrats on getting the bag recently, getting that long-term deal.
Yeah,
we're
nice
stoked to see you much longer on TV.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's
well-deserved.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for thinking of me for this. Really appreciate it. And it was really fun.
Yeah, be well. Take care.
Okay, bye, guys. Amp sit.